it's a challenge to balance the development and harmonizing of a team and still putting the effort into yourself to be who you want to be. And like I said, I do think it starts with you.
Welcome to Mindful Warrior Radio. Mindful Warrior Radio holds a space for stories of leadership, culture, performance, and flow. Tapping into the wisdom and mastery of innovative change makers and leaders from a wide range of diverse fields. My name is Cami Craig. I'm a former elite athlete, Olympic champion, turned performance and culture design coach at Mindful Warrior, and I'm your host of Mindful Warrior Radio. Thanks for joining us. Today on Mindful Warrior Radio, we welcome our guest, Maggie Steffens. Maggie is a professional water polo player for Team USA and has been pursuing her Olympic dream since childhood. Maggie's journey took off in 2009 when she joined the women's national team, and by age 19, she claimed her first Olympic gold at the 2012 London Olympic Games. She was also named MVP of the Olympic tournament. She continued to lead Team USA to back-to-back Olympic golds in Rio and Tokyo as team captain. At Stanford, Maggie's collegiate career was just as impressive, with three national championships and numerous MVP honors. I am thrilled to have my teammate Maggie Steffens on today's episode of Mindful Warrior Radio to discuss topics of leadership, culture, and performance. Let's jump into it. I just want to welcome my good friend, teammate, and just joy to be with Maggie Steffens. Thank you so much for joining us on Mindful Warrior Radio today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's an honor. I love this podcast and what you're doing. So this is fun.
I wanted to start by asking you, Maggie, you have had the honor of being the team captain for the women's U.S. water polo team for 3 Olympic Games now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wanted to start by just having you simply define what that role is to you. How would you define being team captain?
Yeah, I think the great gift of being captain of this team, of the USA Women's Water Polo team, was that you are kind of, there's this like line that I think in other teams or in other roles or in college and high school, a captain means one thing. Whereas on this team, to me, it meant something completely different. I was fortunate to be captain of club in high school and at Stanford. And that role was completely different than being with elite professional athletes and leaders themselves. And so for me, I always thought of being captain was a gift where I get to work with these other amazing women. And how do I just help shine a light on each individual so that we as a team are shining the brightest towards that common goal? And, you know, obviously it's with the national team, it's not like you're the captain or there's co-captains. I really think it's a shared leadership experience. Like yourself, to me, you were a captain. You know, you had, you know, Rachel and Ashley, the squad, and Maddie, and who, you know, there's just so many people that bring a piece to that leadership role. So it kind of diffuses the responsibility, but I guess the definition for me would be, how can I help shine the light on the individuals and what they need, and how can they shine the brightest towards their mission and their goal? And in turn, how does that then create this harmonizing light where we're able to use that to kind of guide our path to our common goal, and getting everyone on that path, right? Which is probably what we'll talk a lot about today, which is probably the hardest part. But yeah, I would say that's a part of the definition.
Yeah. And when you talk about this light, this individual light, and then I like this idea of having a harmonizing light, which is like the team's light, right? What encompasses in what's in this, what exists within this light for you? Is it skills, abilities, personalities, backgrounds, you know, strengths, weaknesses? What lives within this light for you for the individual? And then even, how would you define that light as the team light?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we start at the end, looking back, you know, ideally at the end, individually, you trust yourself to let go, right? You trust your preparation to be yourself, not only out of the water, but also in the water, to take a risk or take that shot that you need to do or swim a little bit faster. So the trust in yourself, but then also in turn, trust in others and trust in your teammates, trust in your coaches, trust in the team mission. And I think an end goal, that's a really hard place to get to. And ideally, like, that's a big part of the light, right? It's hard to shine that light if you don't have trust in yourself, trust in others, and trust in that common mission. And so I think ideally that's where you're trying to get to as a leader, is help create that in each individual. And that journey looks different. You know, I always talk about, like, when you're on a freeway, you see, or on a road, you're going to see motorcycles, you're going to see cars, you're going to see a minivan, you're going to see people on a skateboard, but they're all on the same road. And I feel like that's what you're trying to do as a leader, right? Like, what's the mode of transportation that you yourself need to be yourself and enjoy that journey the most possible and shine the brightest, even if it is a little bit different than everyone else. And you have to learn that, which you were really good at and still are really good at. Like, you have to learn that about everybody. So then harmonizing that, right, is getting everybody. I feel like if you have that foundation of trust, it allows the ability to adapt, mold, shift, and shape to that, you know, harmonizing ability, which is really hard. It's really hard to get to. And I think that's why it's so fun to be a leader. It's like problem solving. It's like solving a puzzle that never stops changing, and, you know, trying to have fun with it.
Yeah. I'm curious of what you've learned about that time it takes to learn each individual and kind of what it, the time it takes to bring a whole team together. And, you know, I share a few of those experiences with you and bringing teams together. And just for our listeners who are leading organizations, leading teams, leading different groups, I'm just, I think it would be important for you to lift up what you've learned about that, that time it takes to invest and develop the light in others and to learn, you know, what is unique about each individual and then how to start applying it to the whole, in a productive, healthy, positive way.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a loaded question because there's so many pieces to it. And yeah, I think the investment is definitely time and experiences, and effort. Time, experiences, and effort. You know, whether you're in, you know, a classroom, whether you're in a business meeting, or whether you're in a pool, you do need that time. You do need shared experiences, and you do have to put that effort in to create that and, you know, build those relationships, build that trust, build the respect. Like, there's so many pieces to it. I wouldn't say there's like a magic number on time for me, because I do think that there's heightened experiences that can speed up the process that might break you down a little bit more or force you to maybe be more vulnerable and share more about yourself or learn about others. You asked about skill earlier, which I do think is an important part, right? As a leader, you're trying to help them be their best as you're also trying to be your best, right? So skill is a part of that. So putting effort, and that's where I think effort comes in, is you are trying to lead by example and be that for everyone else. But at the same time, your job is to help. So if they need to learn something, or they need to get on board, or they're struggling, or they need to develop this new shot, or this, you know, learn how to do Excel, whatever it is, how are you going to be able to help them? And that takes extra effort than maybe somebody else who's just focusing on their own work. And so with that, I do think that takes time, because I also think it's difficult for people to accept help if they don't trust you, or don't know you. So I do think that it kind of starts with you yourself, you know, and creating those relationships and learning about them over time, so that they can trust you when you are trying to put those experiences and effort into play. So for example, you know, like I think about a college season, you know, you only have basically have 8 months, and that's maximum, to try to build a team together. Whereas on Team USA, yes, you're trying to win every year and every summer, but you have an entire Olympic quad. So about 3 to 3.5 years to build a team. And even at the end, during the Olympics, we're still trying to create relationships and new experiences. And even like you and I, who played together for countless years, that changed over time. So I don't think that there's an end to that development piece and that leadership piece and bringing a team together. I think it's continuous. But I do think that there's ways to heighten that, you know, like I said, with time, experiences, and effort, and at times pushing that a little bit more when you need a deadline or kind of need to create that harmony or that group. So yeah.
Really well said. As I was preparing for this interview, I was really thinking about your role as team captain on the team, and just the significance of the leadership role, and how in an athletic setting, I really truly believe there are some unspoken responsibilities and expectations. It's not like, okay, Maggie, you're going to become the team captain of the women's US water polo team, and here's your job descriptions of
there's none of that.
Right. Of what we need you and would like you to do. And these are the expectations and standards of excellence and values. And there's not a really, again, there's not a job description as we would find like probably in the corporate space.
Yeah.
And so I really was thinking about what is unique about this captain role on an athletic team. And I thought there's these unspoken responsibility standards of excellence and expectations. And so I'm curious of how did you bridge the gap of what was kind of expressed or spoken to you and what was unspoken? Like, how did you start to kind of find yourself in that space? And by saying find yourself, like, how did you start developing your leadership and kind of, again, there's those unspoken forces, but yet there's that pressure to be there. And so it's this kind of learning experience. So what was that like for you to kind of close that gap?
Yeah. I honestly, it's a really interesting question, because with the national team, with the sports team, right, you're not like getting a binder. You're not filling out a job description. This wasn't like, I didn't get a sheet of paper that said, this is what I need you to do. These are the projects we need. These are the goals we need to hit. This is the projection we're trying to get to. It's like, hey, it was just like, I kind of slowly became captain. And for me, I've always taken it really seriously on all of my teams, but there was a little bit more of, like even at Stanford, we have a binder of like, okay, this is what you do as captain. And of course there were the intangibles and like you're mentioning, the unspoken kind of responsibilities. But with the national team, it was kind of just show up and okay, well, what does this mean? Like, I still couldn't tell you, I could not print out a sheet of paper and say, this is what the captain does, right? Because I do, like I said, it's a shared responsibility. And although I may carry the flag and or wear the band or do the media and stuff like that, it's not just me. And I think maybe others feel that way, but I've been really fortunate to kind of always feel like I'm not alone in that space. But because of that, you're trying to adapt to the group that you have and the ever-changing you know, personalities, skills and skill sets, experiences, and trying to honestly adapt your own leadership styles to what the group needs versus force them to adapt to what you as a leader need. I feel like that's probably the biggest thing that on sports teams is really unnoticed, because let's just say an Olympic team, which is 13. So you have 12 other girls, women from different backgrounds, different experiences, different levels of play at that time, much different age groups. And they might be completely different one year from the next in terms of, okay, they've matured, they've realized new things, they've gotten better. That team's completely different than the past team. So trying to learn what the team needs, and then you as a leader adapting your styles to fit what works best for them. And I feel like that's probably why it's such a hard question to answer, because the adaptability of it is probably the biggest thing. So yeah, I would say the shared leadership aspect of it, and trying to learn year after year, month after month, honestly, day after day, about like how to adapt my leadership styles to fit the group best. And that's the unspoken responsibility. Yes, maybe it's I speak at media events. That's a written rule. Or I stand in front of the team. Yes, written rule. I think every captain is different. I tend to be like a coach in the water. I'm really communicative. I'm a director in the water. I'm leading a lot in play. But maybe out of the water, I give that job to someone else, so the team's not hearing my voice all the time, right? Like, whereas I know other leaders who are more quiet in the water, but more loud out of the water. So it just totally depends on your group. And I think that's where the unspoken piece comes in. But I would say the biggest piece for me is the weight that I feel as a leader. I felt it a lot my first quad, but I would say my second, third quad more, where I just feel like it doesn't really, of course it matters how I play and do, but if the team wins and if that light shines in the individuals and as a team, I won, right? Like, I feel like I did my job where I was able to support everyone. I was able to get them on track and get them to their mountain peak that they want to get to, as well as our team to the mountain peak we want to get to, even if I'm like unexistent. And then the other way around is like, if our team does not have success or individuals aren't able to shine in the way I know they can, I feel that weight of letting everyone down and not stepping into that role for them. And I think that's the other unspoken piece, like the pressure and responsibility of the success of others, that like, I'm constantly thinking about the team, like going to bed. I'm thinking about how I can be better, but I'm like, what does the team need? What does this girl need? Okay, how can I approach this situation? I'm always thinking about the team, like at all times. That's who I am, but probably being captain like highlighted that responsibility more.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You're making me reflect on my time on the national team, which you were either in the stands cheering us on in 2008 or alongside of me in the pool. And you know how different, and you've gotten to compete in 4 Olympic games now, and I got to compete in 3, and how just those hours and time spent on the team. Like in 2008, I was the youngest on the team, and I was so, my lens and my view and my focus was really around just surviving each practice, figuring out how to navigate.
How do I make it?
Yeah. How to navigate being on the national team. And so it was very self-focused.
Yeah.
And then by 2012, the second Olympic Games that I got to be on, which was your first, I started to lift my head up, right? It was not so siloed in my focus. And now I was able to kind of see myself and perhaps the person, you know, in front of me and to the side of me. And then by the time we got to Rio together, I was like, okay, I'm aware of myself, the person across right. from me, and the whole. I could feel the whole. Yeah. And so in 2016, being I think the oldest at that point, and being on my third Olympics, that pressure you're speaking about and constantly thinking about the team, I remember feeling such excitement winning our first gold in London together. And although there was excitement and joy in Rio, there was a greater feeling of relief that came with it.
Oh, definitely.
And that's totally when you're talking about this pressure of did the job get done by the team? That's my role as a leader. Really, really resonated. And I just kind of had this internal chuckle of like,
yeah, I felt that.
We're all feeling the same way.
Yeah. I mean, after Tokyo, so Tokyo is my third. And that was a really, really hard quad because of COVID, and there's just so much turmoil going on in the world. It just was a really tough quad physically, obviously, but also emotionally. And, like you're saying, to your third quad, right? You're even more, as a leader, you're even like more aware of everyone else, really just trying to help everyone coming in, and they're you 8 years ago, and you want them to have that same excitement. Like, I was lucky enough to be with all of you guys in 2012 and win that first gold. And I had you guys to like lead me, right? And so I always think of it as how do I, and I felt so free and could be myself, like in terms of the way I played and trusted in myself. So how do I recreate that for all these younger girls so they get that same, like, I really want them to achieve their dreams. I really want them to get that experience that I was so blessed to have as well because of those leaders and because of my teammates where I'm now in that role. And in Tokyo, I mean, we ended up winning, and I felt this way after Rio, but it was like not as much. After Tokyo, I was exhausted. Like I was so happy. It was amazing. And like, I'm so just ecstatic. And then that night, like everyone was like, you know, celebrating and whatever, maybe it was the next, I think it was that night. And I like slipped away into my bed and cried. I'm just like, thank God, like I'm so tired. I did the job. Like we did the job. Like I can breathe. Like, and I'm a social creature. And I just was like, I felt like I couldn't breathe until that job got done for the team. So in that, like, totally relate. And I'm sure many people can relate to that, you know, in any different job situation or as any leader. It's like, you know, you have so many people that you're responsible for and their joy. I mean, it sounds so silly, but you're like kind of responsible for their joy. And I really want to bring that joy to people. So, yeah.
When have you felt most challenged in your leadership role, and why, and how did you navigate that challenge?
Ooh, I feel like I'm always challenged, especially on the national team, because there's no role as leader in a way. It's like, you're trying to toe this fine line between knowing what the team needs, trying to, you know, share with the coach what the team needs, but also share with the team maybe what the coaches are needing, and also you yourself trying to be your best. And I feel like at times it's a challenge to balance the development and harmonizing of a team and still putting the effort into yourself to be who you want to be. And like I said, I do think it starts with you, as a leader. Like, you need to be, like you said, right? Like, you were by the third Olympics, you're like, I know me, like my head is up. Like, I got it down. I know, like, I can put all that effort into myself. And by putting all that effort into myself, I can put that into others. But sometimes you can't do that. Like, sometimes the others need way more effort and attention or whatever it is to get to that goal. So just not, I think not forgetting about yourself is one thing that sometimes can be difficult, or like what you might need. So I've gotten really good at asking for help. I'm the youngest of four, so I'm not too bad at it, but, it's definitely something that sometimes it's like, wait, I need to put that effort into myself as well. And then I think just big challenges, right? Like, fault lines in the team, whether it's team chemistry, whether it's buy-in. Like, buy-in is really tough when you don't have full buy-in from everyone, which is easy on the Olympic team because pretty much everyone has buy-in. But it doesn't, not all buy-in looks the same. So yeah, team chemistry, the buy-in, you know, skill levels, like where we're at as a group, frustrations, like there's a lot of fault lines that happen throughout a quad. And I think that brings up challenges on just trying to figure out how to approach it. And that's why I said it's like a puzzle. It's constant problem solving. It's different personalities, different problems. So I would say those are kind of the biggest challenges outside of the balance between leading others and leading yourself. And that's where I've really fallen on my teammates. And I think that's where I'm really lucky. I came from a big family. Like, I mean, you know us better than anyone, but we all kind of have our roles. So it was easy to be like, all right, hey, like, Mel, you're really good at this. Can you handle this situation? Because like, I don't know what to do. Or Cammy, right? Like, thank God you're here because you are perfect at being able to like get us on the same page, get us in line. Like, you know how to set the standards for the group. Like, that's you, you know? So even when there were challenges, I think trying to fall or allow others to step into the space of leadership and give them that space and light and opportunity was something that was like important to help with those challenges. But yeah, I would say those are kind of the biggest ones.
Can you share maybe one or two things that come to the surface for you when you know it's time to take that kind of outward facing focus and turn it inward? Like, when Maggie starts doing this, that's when I, you know that Maggie needs to kind of reel it back in and hone in and come home to self. Like, what are maybe one or two things that start to go on you? Like, is your body start to kind of, you know, start falling apart a little bit, or like, have a good practice or two? And so you're like, wait, I need to kind of turn inward for a little bit and then I can return back to the whole.
Yeah, I think there's probably a few things, you know, in different facets. So I think like emotionally, if I'm like, just all of a sudden I like get home and I'm just like crying, I'm just stressed and I'm tired. And it's like, you know, give yourself some love, you know, give yourself some grace. Like, you clearly need a little bit more attention, or you need some more sleep, or like, cause it is true. Like, at night, I'm maybe some people go home and they're focused on like their own, that own practice, or like, they can turn it off or whatever. You know, everyone's so different in that way, and it's not good or bad. I'll come home and I'm like freaking out. I'm like, oh my gosh, we can't figure out this play. Like, how do we get this person to learn this? Or, okay, I didn't do a good job. Like, I clearly need to change my role in order, you know, there, I'm just constantly thinking about everything. And I think it's important to be able to like step away and turn it off at times. So that's one thing I think on the emotional side, like just overstressing, overanalyzing. I'll overanalyze everything. And then I think physically, definitely like injuries or just feeling tired. Or like, I think a big trigger for me was, I think as you get, you know, at this point in time, we know ourselves really well as players. And when I, something that I'm usually really good at, or like very, I could like do in my sleep in a way, when I start kind of just being a little bit off on those things, I'm like, I am not present. Clearly I am, this is something I should be able to do at any time, and I'm not present, and I'm clearly not here. And so I would say those are some of the red flags for me. In terms of like, if I were to actually like visualize those things, I would say, yeah, those are definitely big
ones. And what brings you back to yourself?
I think there are certain types of resets. I think there's internal resets. So acknowledging it, like, ooh, I am not present, right? Like, presence is a really big thing for me. Or I'm off, like I'm being lazy. Like, I'm not putting the effort in myself that I need. Like, I'm not being a good example, and acknowledging it, which is the hardest part, I think, because you always want to think you're perfect and great, or on, you know, energized and whatever, but you're not. I'm definitely not. So I think the acknowledgement, and then there's, I don't know, I've used different things. I'm a big like self talker. I do a lot of positive self talk and like a reset onto, okay, what's like a small detail I can focus on that kind of gets me back on track, right? Like whether it's in a game and it's a really small detail that I know can bring me back to the present moment, or it's something out of the pool, like acknowledging it and sharing with a teammate, like, hey, like, can we just go hang out for 30 minutes? I just need to step away with you. And like, I haven't been great, or I need to be better. And, but I just need to reset with you, you know, or I need to go laugh or dance and play music with my friend, or I need Pammy to come over and chill and like just hysterically laugh with you and reset. Breathing techniques, right? Which is something I use, but I would say I use that more to like relax and reset with breath, like going underwater. But I'm not someone who necessarily uses breath a lot, like in the middle of it. I'm in the middle of the day, I'm like, okay, I need to do 4 in and outs. Like I'll use internal cues, or I'll get a friend who I'm really close with or a teammate and bring them in. Or like my husband now, you know, has been a big part of those resets for me.
Awesome. Those are so helpful. In your role, I'm curious of how you have intentionally built team culture. I think there's a lot of ways where we probably subconsciously, just like there's a lot of unspoken and unwritten roles and responsibilities within the leadership captain role. And I think there's some ways where culture kind of defaults to certain ways, but how have you intentionally built culture in your role?
I think some of the ways I've intentionally done that, definitely leading by example. So, you know, like one thing that comes to mind is how do we want to be as a team? And I think one thing that like you guys taught me, and I learned from so many of the leaders when I came onto this team, is that professionalism, and knowing that this is like a different level and you're not where it's kind of like welcome to the big leagues type vibe, and making that a welcoming experience, but also intentionally acknowledging like, hey, like you're a professional athlete. This is what, like setting those expectations and those standards while still trying to create this welcoming culture. Because I think there's a really fine line there when you set standards and expectations of this, you know, whether it's professionalism, you know, this gold standard, while still being welcoming and open so that people feel okay to build that trust and be themselves. And so I think that's for me where I was really intentional of trying to create that. And find that balance. And one way of doing that was, okay, when it's business, right? Like when we're in the water and we're doing a drill, I'm going to try to lead by example by playing at game speed, which is like probably that's like what I do, is everything is like a little bit crazy because everyone's like, Maggie, chill out. Like it's just a drill. And I'm like, no, this is a game, right? Like I acted every time I do a drill or a fundamental skill or a lap, or I'm taking a shot, mentally and physically putting myself in game mode so that those expectations for myself are there, right? Like I'm building the right habits, but I'm also setting those standards for the team and pushing others to be in that way. And I'm somebody who definitely is more of like an empowering type leader. I like to say, hey, like, I think you can do this, or hey, try what I just did, or guard me, or you're really good at this. Let's try that, right? Like empowering them with belief and then challenging them. But then out of the water, when it's not necessarily all business, can we bring that fun? Can we bring that lightheartedness? Can we bring that connectivity where we can find that balance of culture? So I think that's something that in terms of intentionality, I definitely tried to do, encouraging people to speak, right? trying to learn them, getting people to share about themselves or their needs so that in the water and out of the water, you learn each other, right? So creating that culture of understanding and vulnerability and allowing then in the water to empower and challenge each other because that is there. So I think that was one, I don't know, that's not necessarily a specific, but I think like finding that balance between standards, excellence, you know, that gold mentality, constantly creating growth, right? Like I will be the first to admit, hey, this is something I'm working on. I need to get better at this. This is year 16 on the team. And like, this is something I need to get better at. So now everyone else is like, whoa, okay, Maggie's trying to get better at this. That's something I thought she was really good at. Now that gives me the space to say the same thing or acknowledge like growth is really important on this team, while at the same time, like having fun and being silly and dancing in the weight room and creating a culture of like connectivity and joy at the same time.
You speak about this driving this culture around professionalism and joy, room for healthy mistakes. I was hearing words such as like openness, vulnerability, trust are a lot of things that you're looking to cultivate on the team. This is, I think, a challenge for many groups in all types of industries. How do you cultivate safety to enact all of that? Because I feel like safety is almost like a part of this bedrock, one of the bedrock values, right? So yeah. that vulnerability, openness, you know, the goofy side of you, the authentic side of you can start coming forward. And, you know, safety, even holding this really kind of high professionalism. How do you begin to cultivate safety within your culture?
Yeah, I think it's really tough because I think on a team of women training with the sport they love, I think it's really difficult, but I do think it's a little easier than, you know, if you're leading a sales team and you only get to see each other here and there and you're not breaking down the walls every day by beating each other up in the water and having to go on 3-week long trips where you literally only have each other to lean on. So I will say that although it is really difficult to create that on our team and in our environment, I do think that it is a little bit easier because of the, like I mentioned earlier, because of the experiences that we create. So for example, I think like one way to help cultivate that is, like I said before, it does start with you. So are you showing how you want them to be, right? Like if you're closed off and you're maybe feeling insecure in your space, which will happen, you know, it's not like you feel that way every day, but if you're feeling that and or you're kind of disrespecting others and not putting trust in others, it's going to be really difficult for the people around you to give you trust or give you respect or give you the security that maybe you need as well. Or if you're not open, it's going to be difficult to have a hard conversation with someone and actually learn what they need. Cause they're like, well, you don't do it. But why would I do it for you? So I do think that feeling of like, it starts with you. And that's where, like, when you have a team meeting, I think early on, I would say I tend to speak more in a meeting to help create that culture and maybe help set the standards. And it might have to be said so that people hear it, but I'm also acting it out. Also seeing I'm not afraid to share. I'm not afraid to speak my mind or talk water, but whatever it is. And then throughout the quad, I try to reel it back. So then that space is created for others. And by doing that and having one-on-one talks with people and giving out trust more than maybe you want to, giving people that respect that they deserve, right? Even if they're brand new on the team, creating a safe space by maybe you share something with them that they're like, whoa, I didn't know that about you. Now, somebody who they're looking to as a leader or as, you know, a veteran or more experienced in the team or in the workplace, wherever it is, they're giving that to them. They're going to feel a little bit more open to give that to you. And I think that does help with that culture of safety. Again, I do think it's a little bit easier in a way because our experiences are so extreme. Like we're literally doing an insane swim set and like feel like we're going to die and have to lean on the person next to you, right? Or like you're on a trip in China and you're sharing a room and it's like, well, it's you and me. Like, so I do think there's those experiences that help create that safety net. But I would say those are like just some ways that help.
In times fast with fear, how have you led yourself and your team through those moments? And I was reflecting on like, what are times fast with fear for us in our industry and in our sport and representing the US? And when are times that I really, really felt fearful or concern? And, you know, as I reflect on that, Maggie, like I have felt that we have trained and prepared so greatly that there are moments of feeling nervous. And, you know, there are times where there's not even space for fear because we're so well prepared. But I think probably one of the more fearful times for me, and I think it goes in alignment with just that pressure that you feel as a veteran or, you know, a leader, is going into the finals against Italy in Rio. Like I did not sleep one wink that whole night before our finals. And I was so concerned about just the politics and Italy. And as we know, Italy, they're a very performative team, and they play in a way that makes it really hard for us to be super fundamentally sound, because you like put a finger on an Italian and it's like somehow there was an underwater bomb that blew up and they're in the air and you're like, I didn't touch this woman. You know how you imagine Italian soccer is how the Italian, you know, national team for So I just had all these kind of like political fears and like, how was the flow of the game gonna go? And you know, the head delegate is Italian. So like, maybe they just are sick of watching America win. And I just had all of these fears, but you know, I think my fear list is very, very small, but we've also really faced some serious adversity as team, as a team as well, in and out of the water, even at, you know, really, really important points. I mean, just thinking about 2016 and the loss we experienced, you just experienced loss in this last Olympic game. You know, there's a heavy grief, but perhaps fear is kind of wrapped around that as well, of, you know, what's shifting Mel's attention, what's shifting Adam's attention, what's shifting Maggie's attention, what's shifting Cammy's attention in these big kind of call to actions outside of the water. So I don't know if you want to draw from that, you have space to do that. If you don't, is there any time that you can think of where you were really elevated, or perhaps there was fear in the system and you led yourself through it and, or the team through it?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the first thing I thought of was like, swim sets are so hard for me. I get so scared. I'm like, am I going to make it? So honestly, at the very, and this is hilarious, like four-time Olympian, what was one of the biggest fears? Like literally every day surviving is a fear of mine. But that's a very real thing for me. Like it seems so minuscule, but I do think that that helps, like you're saying, kind of make those other fears that are so much bigger kind of more normalized, because every day I definitely was like, I can't do this, or I'm gonna fail right now, or I'm gonna let my team down. And I think that's probably the biggest thing for me. My biggest fear ultimately is letting the team down. Like, I think, you know, if you let yourself down, you can kind of, you're upset and you're bummed and like, you're going to be angry or whatever. But when you let others down, that's like my biggest fear. And so obviously, like, going into every tournament, especially in Olympics, that like, everyone wants the gold, everyone wants to win, right? Everyone wants that. So not being your best for the team for me is like a really big fear, was always a really big fear of mine. And still is, like, to this day. So I would say that's, in kind of to your point of Rio, you know, that's basically what you're feeling. You're like, I want to make sure this team wins. Like, like, obviously there's other facets, like with the rest and whatever, but like the end of the day, the fear was not achieving the goal with your group. So that, I would say, like, that's probably my biggest fear overall. But like I said, you kind of live through those every day. And I feel like, because that was such a big fear of mine, I'm a really big visualizer. I think that's one of my superpowers as an athlete, is I'm really weirdly imaginative and can visualize anything and everything. And I can visualize, you know, anytime I'm training, I'm visualizing, or in a swim set when I'm so scared. So I'm like, I'm like, okay, it's fourth quarter, you're down, you have to chase this girl. Like, I'm literally living in the moment. Like, I am physically there. And that's something that's gotten harder to do as I get older, because I'm just tired. But that visualizing is something that has kind of, I think that's why I have fear every day, because I'll visualize, oh my gosh, what if it's tied in? What if it's, there's a minute left and it's tied, and this 6-on-5 that we're practicing right now in this moment, that means nothing. Like, this is it. And if I miss, I let the team down, and oh my gosh, I'm never going to sleep for the rest of my life. Right. So like, I feel like also the fear I had was letting people down, but I lived those fears every day when I visualized it. Like, oh my gosh, what if it comes down to me to take a penalty shot? Or, oh my gosh, what if I missed my shot block and the ball went near side, and like, that was my fault. Right. And that's not how the game works. That's not how life works. It's really not about one moment, but as athletes, I feel like you can kind of encompass your life around a moment, even when it's never happened. Like, this is all hypothetical. So I think for me, I lived a lot of those fears before they happened. And by doing that and kind of working through those in practices, I feel like that helped me, like you're saying, maybe feel more nervous versus feel scared. But I still feel scared. Like, even in this last Olympics, I like have to do something and I'm like, well, I feel like I'm going to throw up. It's like, I've felt this before. It's nothing new. Like, this isn't a new feeling, and I've dealt with it, and I'm confident in myself to deal with these fears, because I and my team have done it every day.
It is such a trip. I can't think of even a better word, but I mean, really, to have a fear of failure, either, you know, a personal fear of failure that would impact the team, or a collective failure that the team is experiencing. And, I'm over here giggling a little bit, because I know your energy and behavior around like some of these swim sets. And I'd be like, I can't handle this fear, because for me, I just got to,
you should see me now. I'm more chill, and I'm still like not the most, like,
but what a unique environment. And like you said, you have gotten to face fear every day, because when you're training for the Olympic Games, and you have a coach like we do, the idea is to push us to failure every day in one way or another, whether it's in the swim set, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's in, you know, stretching our mind and how we're looking at film and thinking about the team, or in a scrimmage when you are, you know, matched up with who I believe we were scrimmaging against, the best players in the world. Each other. And, you know, there were moments where you didn't make the time, or you couldn't hold the weight ball over your head long enough, or you got pushed out of set, or your shot got blocked, or you missed the 5 meter. There's so many ways in which we had micro experience of failures. And we somehow had to build ourselves back up and maintain a certain level of confidence that allows you to get through a 6.5 hour day of training at the Olympic level. So it's just, I mean, it's fear and fear of failure. Fear of failure is such a real thing. And what I'm hearing is the more that you get your repetition and the micro failures you experience, it kind of normalizes your humanity and your ability to recover. And so that you can face failures and grow from them, recover from them seamlessly, grow from them, and keep moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely love the concept of fail forward. I feel like that's something that has been ingrained in me since I was a kid. And I even like studied that at Stanford in a way. And I think that's like a big thing that's easier to do in sport, because you see your mistake right away. And then you obviously in a game, you might not get an opportunity to do it, but okay, I failed. I made a mistake. It happened. Now, how can I fail forward? How do I learn from it? How do I grow? How do I get better for it next time? And I think like what you were saying, one thing I always say is resilience, right? Which is, that's what it is. Failing forward is resilience, and growth it's a habit. It's a muscle. And just like a bicep, right? Like if you leave that alone, you never do it. You're not going to grow that, right? If you're trying to grow your bicep, you can literally visualize someone like pumping iron in the gym. And I think that's to your point, like in order to build that, whether you're an athlete or not, like you have to build that over time for it to get stronger and for you to have more trust in it. So the more you do it, the more you try, right? The more you try hard things or do a challenge, and whether you fail or succeed at it, the more you do that and kind of push yourself and try to fail forward in it, the bigger you're growing that resilience muscle, the bigger you're growing that courage as well. And so I do think that, like you're saying, it's not something people are born with. It's not like a magic power. It's something that it's a muscle. You've got to work on it and build it.
As you look back over the 4 Olympic games in which you competed, what is a common thread you experienced throughout all of them?
There's so many common threads, to be honest. I would say the biggest common thread is twofold. One, I would say, is growth. I feel like I'm completely different. I'm not a different person, but I've completely grown, adapted, matured, you know, developed, all these different words, because they really do mean different things, than I was last quad, than I was quad before, than I was my first quad. And accepting that is really important, and like loving that. So I would say growth as an individual, and then growth as teams. So I don't think any team is the same. And I think that being able to see that is like, has been a really common thread from day one until, you know, day 1050. It's like, we've had so much growth as teams. And then internally you're seeing others grow, and then seeing myself grow. So I would say that's one really big common thread. And then I would just say the second is love. I think that's a really big part of our team culture. And I think we've been able to keep that really strong. And I think that word looks and is shaped really different in each of the quads I've been a part of. But that word has always been a really big thread throughout our like Olympic experience. So that's something that I'm really grateful for, and why I still am here. There's still like the joy and fun and love of sport and connectivity, but also there's so much room for self-growth and team growth. And I think that's why like I'm still here and still, well, I don't know if I'm still doing it, but right now I am. So I'd say those are two big things. And I think because of that, we've been able to see growth in the sport of water polo like we've never seen before. And it took a long time to get there, but because of that, we've gotten to this point.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time and your insight and your knowledge and experience. I mean, I could probably talk to you for 5 hours in 1,000 different ways, but thank you so much. I'm so excited to share with our listeners.
Yeah, thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please take the opportunity to share with a friend, follow Mindful Warrior Radio, and leave a review. To learn more about Mindful Warrior and Mindful Warrior Radio, please follow us on Instagram at The Real Mindful Warrior and check out our website at www.mindfulwarrior.com. I look forward to our next discussion here on Mindful Warrior Radio.